The Truth News Network.
In a world where idiocracy is the new world order, it takes a strong voice to speak the truth. This is TNN,
the Truth News Network.
And your beacon of light in the tunnel of lies is Dan Newman.
You know, I just had a thought. I wonder if anyone has copyrighted that word, idiocracy. I really don't think there's a formal definition of the word, but I think everyone listening today, with everything going on in our world around us, especially up in the Potomac Valley, we understand what Pete Moss meant when he called it idiocracy. It is idiotic, especially in the Potomac Valley. Hi there, everybody. Welcome back to Truth News Network. I'm Dan Newman. We're talking about some of that idiocracy today in our story about the ruling class. Now, let me take you back a little bit. We're going to talk for just a second about something that isn't about Washington, but it relates directly to our story today. I've always loved riding motorcycles. On the road, road motorcycles. When we married and began having children, my wife put her foot down. I left the motorcycle world. But 20 years ago, when our kids left home, they all grew up, were getting married, went to college, she told me I could get a Harley. I did, and I hit the road. Since then, I've ridden for more than 100,000 miles seeing North America. North America is breathtaking. I know it looks great from the air, but it's really breathtaking from the ground. I had for years, primarily for business, flown all over the continent, but I never gave much thought to what was 30,000 feet below that jet. The world is vastly different 30,000 feet below that commercial jet, I can promise you. At least different from the perceptions of most jet travelers. At ground level, the real America unfolds, and it is amazing. In the United States today, we everyday citizens have evolved from a salt-of-the-earth group of gritty settlers who did everything to a country full of flyover business owners. Instead of the multi-generational hands-on ways of our forefathers, we live a life based on news headlines and sound bites and find shortcuts for just about everything. We're looking for the easy way, the quick way. So we trust a group of a couple of thousand elected and appointed bureaucrats to run our company, the United States, for us. We live our hectic lives of chasing the dollar while raising a family, you know, a house, two or three cars, vacation homes, vacations, hobbies, being soccer moms and weekend golfers. We're just chasing the dream. Meanwhile, our government is quietly and steadily taking our dream with our company down the tube. Americans must awaken to the reality of an impending disaster. Our company, our country, is in jeopardy, not from a foreign takeover, but a hostile management takeover. And somehow, some way, members of our very own management team have stealthily slipped into the ownership of our company. At least they act that way. Most of those no longer even consider us in their decision-making to run the company, the United States of America. They have become, and we've let them become, the United States ruling class. It's real. It's here. And it's deadly. Well, who are they? Just take a look around. Who did you vote for in 2016 to represent you in Congress and in the White House? Who did you vote for in 2018 to represent you in your state houses, and back in Congress? No, not every member of the U.S. House of Representatives is part of this ruling class, but your representative just might be. If they are, they are members of what has heretofore been the most powerful political group in United States history, bar none. It's a closed group of single-minded politicians who have, over decades, developed a method of operating government that requires they walk a thin line. They must simultaneously conduct normal government business that company stockholders, American citizens, you and me, can watch along with operating the sinister operations in which they subvert their positions and the assets of our corporation to achieve their long-term goals that rarely line up with the goals that you and I have. Goals. What goals? Well, that's a great question. I don't believe I've heard anybody talk about this. I could speculate about the goals of politicians and their objectives, but I'm not going to do that. but it is realistic and justified for us to look at their actions, at least those we can see, and make logical determinations of what their goals might be. Let's start with something that is seldom mentioned, and when indicated, conversations about it seem to stop real quickly. Did you know American taxpayers have for decades paid lawmakers victims of sexual assault settlements to make those incidents go away, thereby avoiding public embarrassment and litigation? Bet you didn't know that. Or if you did, you don't know how deep it is. News of a law, and it is a law that structures a process for this, has been around for quite a while. It was only made public, though, in 2017. So let's look at how all this works and what it means to you and me. In 1995, Congress passed what's called the CAA, an effort to apply 12 federal laws to the legislative branch. Congress has notoriously exempted itself from accountability measures, said Danielle Bryan, who was executive director of the Project on Government Oversight, an organization focused on promoting transparency in government, in an email. That email continues, "It's no wonder the public has such a low approval of Congress, given that they exempt themselves from workplace laws that they apply to the rest of society." Think about that. Congress makes all those laws. You know, those workplace laws, all of the equal opportunity, employment regulations, and all of those. Congress makes those, but they exempt themselves from living under the same rules in the workplace that you and I. It's long overdue for Congress to live by the standards of conduct they appropriately demand from others. The 1995 law also established an account of the Office in the Treasury of the United States for the payment of awards and settlements, a fund paid for by guess who? You, me, and every other taxpayer to pay their settlements for stuff they do wrong in the workplace. The payouts have varied widely, just a few dollars here and there. Lowest claim, think about this, the smallest claim was $40,000 in 1997. And the biggest claim, $4 million for one in 2007. $4 million to just under $1 million in 2017. The fund is virtually unlimited. There's no cap on it. Nobody knows where it sits and exactly where the money comes from, except we know where the money begins to come from, and that's out of our pockets. We are told that much is necessary to pay awards and settlements. They don't define what much is, however. A spokesperson for the Congressional Office of Compliance said that money is only added to the fund when it's needed for the payments. Where do they add it from? Question. No answer. The exact source of the money is still a question. The source of the money in the fund is excluded from the standard appropriations budget made public by Congress each year. Why do you think they would just kind of accidentally forget to leave that information out? It's because watchdog groups and people like me look at the budgets that come out, and we're going to ask some questions. I don't know what they would call that fund. I think the correct one would be the Congressional Bad Stuff Slush Fund. But it's never tracked. And nobody knows where it comes from. When it's necessary, it just shows up. There is no process by which voters or potential employees can find out who the harassers in the office for what they've been accused or if they've settled with victims before. The fund used to settle violations is perhaps just one of the several pockets of money throughout the government that are used to handle judgments made against government employees. There's probably more than just this one fund. As harassment accusations topple prominent men in media, comedy, and Hollywood, it's come under more scrutiny. And that's why we're talking about it today. It was hidden until 2017. The Settlement and Awards Fund comes from an effort to hold Congress accountable for the federal laws that all other employees have to follow. That's a novel idea, isn't it? But as prominent men in other fields have faced snowballing accusations of sexual harassments, it's instead shielded members of Congress from publicity. Poor guys, poor girls. What's the goal there? Well, it's to maximize personal opportunities while serving Congress and pushing responsibility for their questionable and wrong deeds down the pipeline to taxpayers. Go figure. Let's talk for a moment about Travelgate. This one's really hackled me. Average members of Congress struggle with travel to and from their districts. Airplane tickets in and out of Washington are not cheap. You may not know that if you haven't tried to get there, but they know you're coming, and you've got to be there if you are coming and buying tickets, so the tickets are a bit pricey. But if you're the Speaker of the House, Representative Nancy Pelosi, as an example, your travel is not only not expensive for you, you fly first class. And you fly in private jets that are paid for by taxpayers. And the Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, has taken it to some new levels. Listen to this. New documents from the U.S. Air Force detailing Speaker Pelosi's use of Air Force aircraft between March of 2009 and June of 2010. And they pretty much tell the same outrageous story as previous documents we've uncovered and released here. Here are the highlights from that batch of documents obtained under a Freedom of Information Act request. Pelosi used the Air Force aircraft. Now, what that is, if you've heard of a G6 or a G7, a Gulfstream private jet, they fly her in the military version of that. It's not painted and really pretty on the outside, but the inside looks just like one if you bought it for yourself or your company bought it. They run about $62 million. She's used that aircraft for a total of 85 trips, covering 206,264 miles from March the 2nd of 2009 through June 7th of 2010. Pelosi, her guest, and Air Force personnel logged a total of 429 hours on those flights. Members of Pelosi's family were guests on several flights. As an example, June 20th of 2009, Speaker Pelosi's daughter, son-in-law, and two grandsons joined a flight from Andrews Air Force Base to San Francisco. That flight included $143 in on-flight expenses for food and other items. That's not a big deal. On July 2nd, 2010, Pelosi took her grandson on a trip from Andrews to Travis Air Force Base in Fairfield, California, which is northeast of San Francisco. One trip in particular, a little short one, to Milan, Rome, Naples, and Kiev, has received some really close scrutiny. The 2015 tour from July 30th to August 6th cost the Air Force $184,587.81. Documents obtained again by a Freedom of Information Act. Pelosi, along with several other Democrat members of Congress, made that trip with members of their families. The exact purpose of the trip? Well, they haven't told anybody yet what they went for. A Politico news story at the time alleged Pelosi's congressional delegation, this is a quote, intended to underscore the U.S. commitment to security in that region. Wow. Don't you feel better about that trip? In 2011, Judicial Watch exposed Pelosi's rampant use of luxury Air Force jets to travel between D.C. and her congressional district in California. We gave these to you previously at Truth News Network, like a 5-hour, 3,000-mile journey each direction. So when she goes home on the weekend, which she does, and if you had a private jet that didn't cost you anything, you probably would too. So it's 5 hours each way, so that's 10 hours round trip, 6,000 miles. In just 2 years, Pelosi accumulated, hold on, you're not going to believe this, $2,100,744.59 worth of travel expenses, which included a paltry $101,429.14 for in-flight conveniences such as food and booze. And there's even more, folks. There's all kind of stuff going on. What are their goals? We'll talk about that more in a little bit. When we come back, we're going to look at the rest of Congress and the junkets that they have pretty much at their own disposal. Don't miss it. We'll be back in 1 minute at Truth News Network, truthnewsnet.org.
So busy you don't have time for today's news on TV or newspaper?
Never fear.
TNN has your answer. Download TNN Podcast to your phone.
Catch up with the latest news
during your busy day. The Truth News Network.
TNN. truthnewsnet.org.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Julie, hey, guess what day it is?
Oh, come on, I know you can hear me.
Mike, what day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo woo!
Ronnie, how happy are folks who save hundreds of dollars switching to Geico?
I'd say happier than a camel on Wednesday.
Hump day!
Get happy. Yeah. Get Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
When Bolshevik Barbie throws shade, you have the weapon of light. The truth. TNN. The Truth News Network.
And then the junkets. Travel junkets became a point of discomfort for many voters in 2006 to 2007, following the discovery of disgraced lobbyist Jack Abramoff's frequent use of excursions to lord influence over several elected officials. These fact-finding missions included hard-hitting research such as rounds of golf at Scotland's famed golf course St. Andrews, trips to the Fiesta Bowl and the Super Bowl. In actuality, those are just some quick highlights. The list of Abramoff-coordinated trips is relatively lengthy. Of course, following the public revelation and the eventual indictment and conviction of Abramoff, all those trips were deemed either demonstrably illegal or, at the very least, gross misappropriations of an official's time. Congress passed a bill reining in gifts, meals, and travel packages from lobbyists, and the number of congressional junkets fell off a cliff, dropping from an all-time high of nearly 5,000 trips in 2005 at the cost of $10 million, way down, only 1,846 visits the following year. Wow. The bill limited trip length on foreign travel to 7 days and domestic travel to 4 days, but also allowed for, wait for it, some exceptions, go figure. These exceptions, well, it included the allowance of educational and charitable groups to finance trips for elected officials. In entirely unsurprisingly fashion, it didn't take long for lobbyists and lawmakers to figure out the best way to utilize exceptions to the full extent. As an article in the Columbia Journalism Review explained recently, quote, the arrangement works like this. A congressional caucus, an official group of lawmakers with common characteristics or interests, such as the Congressional Black Caucus or Blue Dog Democrats or the Congressional Marcellus Shale Caucus, sets up a charitable organization. That organization, in turn, seeks donations which do not have to be disclosed. In addition to its good works, the charitable entity then organizes events, such as conferences or retreats, in which the caucus members rub shoulders with contributors. The nonprofit can invite special interests, corporations, unions, and others, to fork over large donations to sponsor and participate in these events. So, not only have lawmakers figured out a way around travel junket reform, they've also figured out a way to turn their vacations into a fundraising tool. Perhaps the most ostentatious abuse of this new charitable junket system came in the summer of 2011, when Eric Cantor, Republican, arranged for 80 House members, that's 80, and their families, oh my gosh, hundreds of people, to visit Israel through a charity affiliated with the pro-Israeli lobbying group American Israel Public Affairs Committee. This massive, quote, fact-finding mission, end quote, was capped off quite embarrassingly with a quite possibly drunk Kansas Representative Kevin Yoder, who took a late-night skinny dip in the Sea of Galilee. Let's wrap this up. This is becoming more and more nauseating as we go through. None of these things we mentioned today have much to do with the legislative nightmares we are currently watching play out on the international stage. But they illustrate in part just how many, if not most, members of Congress go to D.C. planning on milking the system in some way, our system of government, to line their pockets often as a direct expense to taxpayers for all kinds of perks that taxpayers on the most part don't know about, and certainly don't know how or why they exist and work anyway. These examples are just a fraction of the ways those on the left are shading American taxpayers, and they're not by themselves. It happens with those on the right as well. How do they let it happen? Why do they let it happen? Let's face it. There's nothing about this for which any member of Congress is going to take responsibility. If and when someone wants to try, they usually shoot down. And here's what they say. Everybody on Capitol Hill does this. Why shouldn't I? You know what's worse? They get away with it. Let's face facts. Having foxes guard a hen house is a pretty stupid decision on somebody's choice. They're doing this is not just about money. It's not just about bringing some low-level employee back to earth. It's about teaching us all a lesson. And they love to teach lessons. They know how to do it best, I guarantee you. But you know what? They're going to win every day. And last but not least, does any of this illustrate why some, if not all, that we see today in the Schiff Pelosi faux impeachment inquiry are permeating our 24/7 news cycle? What is right, necessary, and justified for members of Congress to do as part of their jobs for us is diminished by their personal need to perpetuate a gravy train of benefits that include perks, dollars and cents, interest, and most of all, power that comes with fitting in with the D.C. power brokers. The American taxpayers are not on the radar screen of accountability to any of those congressional members. Their fantasy world does not extend to the borders of their congressional districts. You can bet on that. Its boundaries are a two-mile circle around Capitol Hill in D.C. Nothing, and pretty much no one outside that circle, is really significant to them. For these and other reasons, we don't have time to mention here. We need to understand that you and I are just a Social Security number on an IRS tax bill and a check that we send back, or a zip code on a contribution check to most of the congressional members caught up in the D.C. circus. There are certainly a bunch of them who wear white hats, but for the most part, the bad guys are controlling our government. If you didn't understand why so many in Washington, even Republicans, expend so much effort, time, and taxpayer money to rid their world of Donald Trump, well, now you know. He may be rough, he may mix it up a bit like no other politician we know ever has, but he's in the corner of everyday Americans, and he always wears a white hat. Well, well, well. I wear a white hat when I wear a hat. I'm one of the good guys. I'm sure you are too. Food for thought today. And that's what we do here every day. We give you truth. We don't tell you what to think, but we tell you stuff and we encourage you to figure out your spot in everything that we talk about here for yourself. Look for the truth and be back here tomorrow at Truth News Network, truthnewsnet.org. So long, everybody.
From Singapore to Bangor, Maine, letting freedom ring. Dan Newman, TNN,
the Truth News Network.